Okay, thank you very much. Before we begin, please note that this meeting is being recorded. The time is now 10:01 on Wednesday, April 17, 2024, and the Private Activity Bond Committee is called to order. For the record, my name is Jaime Alvarez. I'm the Director of Debt Management here at Oregon State Treasury, the designee and chair to the PAB Committee. For roll call, I would like to ask each of the committee members of the Private Activity Bond Committee to identify themselves for the record. Rhonda?
Hi, I'm Rhonda Nelson, Capital Finance Manager and the Governor's Designee.
Thank you. Teresa?
You're muted, Teresa.
Oops, Teresa Diebel, public member.
Thank you. So thank you everybody for attending. Everyone should have received a copy of the agenda and meeting material for today's meeting, and listed on there will be topics that will be covered today. If not, they're posted on the PAB website for your reference. So topics today, we'll be going over the private activity bond status. We will be looking at a volume cap request from Oregon Business Development Department, projects update from Oregon Housing and Community Services Department, and lastly, review the proposal for PAB Administrative Rule Amendment. So with that, I would like to remind all attendees to please mute their mics unless you are speaking. Committee members, please feel free to come off mute at your discretion. And persons attending or not committee members, I would ask that you please hold your questions till after each speaker has fully presented. Thank you. So with that, we will go to the private activity bond status. I will turn it over to my colleague, Sarah, to discuss.
Thank you, Chair. So first we have the 2023 carry forward summary. OHCS requested and was allocated the full 2023 carry forward of $287 million. As you can see, we've verified these figures with them. So to date, they have spent $27,500,000 of that carry forward. And next we have the 2024 volume cap summary. As of today, the committee has not yet approved any allocations, as we did not receive any allocation requests in the January meeting for the 2024 volume cap. So we still have the full $78 million. Today, Oregon Business Development Department has requested the $32 million. So we have the current allocations. We have the request today of the $32 million. If that is approved, the committee will be left with $46,169,750 for the remainder of the year of the 2024 volume cap.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. Are there any questions from the any committee member? Okay, thank you. We will move to the next agenda item. We will now proceed to the presentation and volume cap request from Oregon Business Development Department. And I believe we have Kate Sinner from the department to present the request.
Hi, yes, that's me. Can folks hear me okay?
Yes,
yeah?
Yes.
Okay, great. And Sarah, do you have the slides?
I do. So did you want me to go through them for you?
Would you mind, please? So as folks can see, there were some support documents here, but I'm just going to go through a few slides to give you a bit of a summary on the project. So we could just start with the title slide, please. So thanks, everyone, Chair Alvarez, members of the committee. My name is Kate Sinner, and I'm the Director of Innovation and Business Resources at Business Oregon, which is the state's economic development agency. We go by either OBDD or Business Oregon, either way is appropriate. So thanks for the opportunity to be here with you today. I want to acknowledge that I've got numerous other members of OBDD on this call today and want to thank them for their great work on this project to get us to this point. But today we're going to be presenting this request for $32 million for private activity bond allocation for the BHS projects at Lane County LLC. And another point is that this project is supported by the governor's office. So if you could move to the next slide, please. So this allocation, essentially what it will do is help finance a public-private partnership with Lane County to build a large waste and energy and materials recycling facility just south of Eugene. And again, we're requesting a $32 million allocation from you all. And this is a partnership with Lane County. It will create this facility in Goshen, Oregon, which is about 25 minutes south of Eugene. Lane County has been determined to be an economically distressed county under our administrative rules. It's OAR Rule 123-024-001. This project is estimated to create 69 family wage full-time jobs in the community, and it will provide valuable recyclables for sale both within Oregon and elsewhere. So that's a traded sector component to this project. It will also create a visitor and educational center, which will be located on site and will provide public tours and educational opportunities for students. Next slide, please. So these are the references to the eligibility component here. And so this is a project that we've deemed to be eligible as an exempt facility, and it is a project we've deemed to be eligible as a solid waste disposal facility. Next slide, please. Again, kind of reiterating that second slide. So a couple key components here are that it is going to be a job creator for the community, with the company estimating that it will create around 69 full-time family wage jobs, and it will produce traded sector goods. Next slide, please. This is just a summary slide on the total project cost and the allocation for which we're seeking. And then the slide with all the images. These are just to kind of depict the type of activities that will take place in the facility that will be built. So various recycling, and we're also going to be selling some of the natural gas that will be created. Well, they will be selling that natural gas to perhaps Northwest Natural or some other company in need. And then that is really my quick and dirty project summary. And so if there are any questions, I'm happy to take them now or defer them to the team that's on the call. But with that, that is the project. Thanks for the opportunity to present to you today.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Any questions from committee members?
I have just one question. I was curious. So it's $105.5 million total project, and you're requesting $32 million. Has the remaining balance already been secured in other forms of funding?
That is a question that I'd like either one of my team members to take, or I see that the CEO of the company is also on the call, Steve Miller.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. To address that, thank you. Appreciate the time. Yes, we have a term sheet organized for the total amount of funding, and this would be part of that total.
I did see Tom Schnell's hand raised on the team briefly, but you pulled it down. Was there anything you'd like to add, Tom?
Yeah, I can add to that. You know, Steve mentioned they are working with JPMorgan Chase to secure the $105 million in various different forms. We're just covering $32 million on it as a tax-exempt status of it. The rest of it will be issued in taxable bonds to cover the entire project.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Teresa, did I see your hand?
Yeah, I saw reference to the project diverting at least 63% of solid waste that would otherwise go to Short Mountain Landfill. Are there no current diversion methods? What is happening currently? Is this a 63% decrease, or yeah, help me understand that piece.
Yeah, I can address that as well. The material coming into the facility, all of it now goes to the landfill. So we're not dealing with any of the material that is otherwise diverted, but rather the material that now goes directly to the landfill. We'll be processing that and diverting a significant quantity of that material, including the organic material, to create biogas. These efforts then move the total diversion in the county to an amount of 63% or greater, which is consistent with the county's solid waste plan and climate action plan that the board and the county had agreed some years ago.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. One question for me, as far as schedule and timing, when is the facility scheduled to be online?
We're scheduled to break ground this year, and we have approximately an 18 to 24 month build from that point to operations.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions from committee members?
None from me. Thanks.
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you again for the presentation and for including all the letters of support from the area Chamber of Commerce and from Lane County. It's great to see the impact projects like this can bring to the area. Yeah. Real quick, I would now like to entertain to see if there's any questions or comments from the public. Jake?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I have some comments on this proposal.
Sure.
Good morning, Chair Alvarez and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jake Pelroy, and I'm the president of Lane County Garbage and Recycling Association, a local family-owned and operated association. I'm here to express our opposition to Lane County IMRF in partnership with Bulk Handling Systems. At the time of the vote for the county, all the local haulers, organics processors, recycling processors, and many Lane County cities have voiced concerns or opposition to this facility. My intent here is to testify to correct some of the information in the application in hopes that you will reconsider this approval until you have accurate information. The application states the facility will operate with the intent of diverting a minimum of 63% of solid waste currently entering the Short Mountain Landfill. The 63% stated is actually the county's overall diversion goal that they've set. Currently, the county has one of the highest diversion rates in the state. They have a 53% diversion rate. The contract for the IMRF facility itself only requires a 35.5% diversion rate, which is considered an industry standard low. Regarding the 225,000 tons being delivered to the facility. The contract that we have seen only requires 160,000 tons to go to this facility, not 225,000. If you apply the minimum required diversion percentage to this number, the actual diverted tons would be closer to 59,000. The county has repeatedly stated that they are not partnering with the with BHS on single stream recycling side of the facility, which the company has stated that that is a bonus to this community and something separate. We would like to make sure that no public funds, bond money is, are allocated towards the construction or operational costs associated with single stream recycling. Or the contract is being entered in by an LLC that was created after the RFP was awarded, not the entity that was listed in the RFP submittal. We believe this is unlawful. In the last piece of information, the Chamber of Commerce support letter states the facility will provide an economic benefit to the area. However, my association had asked the chamber about their study, and it was not done in high depth level. So therefore, we paid for a study from Eco Northwest to look at the county's proposal, and they determined this proposal has a net negative to the community. That full report is available on our website, which is at lcgra.com. I hope this information was helpful to you, and thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much for your input. Do we have any other questions? Okay. Hearing none, is there a motion to award 2024 volume cap to Oregon Business Development Department for the bulk handling system project in the amount of $32 million?
I move that we allocate the requested $32 million from the 24 volume cap to the Oregon Business Development Department for the bulk handling system project.
Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Great. We'll put it to a vote. The motion to approve this request has been moved and seconded. Committee members, how do you vote? Rhonda?
Yes.
Teresa?
Yes.
And myself, Jaime. Aye. Okay, so with that, the request for the 24 volume cap to Oregon Business Development Department in the amount of $32 million has been unanimously approved and passed by the PAB committee. Thank you very much for the presentation and best of luck with the project.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate your support.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now move to the next agenda item. So now we will proceed with the presentation from Oregon Housing and Community Services Department for some project updates. Who do we have from Housing?
Hi, for the record, this is Natasha Detweiler-Davey from Affordable Rental Housing. I'm Director of Affordable Rental Housing Division at Oregon Housing and Community Services. I also have here with me many others on our team, including Matthew Harris, our debt management manager, which probably has a better title. Sorry, Matthew. And Ty Dunson-Strain, assistant director of our production group.
Great. Thank you.
And so I just have I put together just a few current picture slides of our work, if I'm able to screen share. Great. So again, this is Natasha Detweiler Davey, and I think the screen sharing is working. Let me know if it's not. So we're excited to be able to be providing you with this update, as we are been deploying private activity bonds to be used for 4% low-income housing tax credit. Obviously, the private activity bonds produce our lending into these projects, and it also serves to generate a 4% housing tax credit when we use at least private activity bonds to finance at least 50% of the total project costs. And that allows then an equity investor to add resources into the project, which would ordinarily cover at least 30% of the total project costs. As we are managing our pipeline, we have continued to navigate all of the constraint and resources and demand for resources. So what I've put here on the slide are on the left, the known private activity bond resources that we have aligned to use for these for affordable rental housing purposes. Both the carry forward, which we had previously received, requested and received, and then the $450 million of current year resources allocated through the bond bill. On the right hand side are the projects that we have in the pipeline for private activity bond use this year. And so what you'll see there on the bottom in blue are the ones that have closed already. The next layer of brown are the projects that are currently on our production calendar and are proceeding as proceeding with all of, with readiness factors and are showing ability to perform. That next layer are those that are on our calendar but are not meeting the readiness standards. And so there are, as for those that have tracked our conversations over this for the last 2 years, in recasting and turning this resource into an oversubscribed resource, we were working to build an intentional perspective on making sure that there was readiness, that we are prioritizing putting these resources where we know we have projects that can use them. And so those, that is that area, that group of projects where we are seeing that they are having some struggles being ready. And then we have the other, that last stack on top, which are projects waiting to be able to step in to take their place. And so we're actively working to triage all of that that work. Projects are continuing to experience construction project challenges, which is both in anticipation of construction. So where we are seeing, and there's just some trend graphs here that I have on the side where we're seeing escalation and see the impact to projects where we have construction cost increases, interest rate increases. So, and it always seems that as soon as the timber stabilizes, we have escalating interest rates. And those are just putting pressure on projects in a different way. We also know that there's increased operating costs that projects are now needing to plan for, interest rate escalation being one of the many of those, labor costs at projects and security needs and on down the line. But in terms of insurance costs, this is something that we have done some active survey work around over the past year or two. And seeing that approximately 49% of our affordable rental housing survey respondents reported insurance premiums increasing over 50% and 26% over 100% increase. And so those have significant impacts to project operating budgets, which then impacts ability to leverage debt and answer those problems. So those are all pressures that projects are navigating. And is informing how we are working to approach this. I think I spoke to you last quarter, I think probably more than once, around our work in affordable rental housing to update and strategically realign our funding process to make sure that we are doing so in a way to really actively build feasible budgets and lessen the exposure to the impacts of projects between final funding commitment and construction close, so that there's a lesser window for those volatile factors to derail a balanced budget, a balanced development budget. We are approaching the opening of that, now we're calling it the Oregon Centralized Application, the ORCA process, to be able to do this new strategy around financing, selecting projects. And overall, it is deconstructing the evaluation process so that we can provide earlier upfront conditional commitments of resources and a bit later the final funding commitment so that we are seeing a lot closer to construction start, the final budgets and figures, so we know that we are calibrating all of those pieces in alignment with each other. Our current recommendation that we have already introduced to Housing Stability Council is to hold $30 million in resources to be able to address funding gaps in projects. Both some of the issues that are coming up as projects have already entered construction, but also our private activity bond pipeline. So these projects that are struggling and wanting to make sure that we are kind of building a consistent lens. So what are the places where to give ourselves tools and the developers tools to understand what are the places where we can find solvency and where is it too much and where is it where we will not have resources? So thinking about where an increased need is, you know, within a 10% frame, that feels reasonable. Maybe we'll be able to remedy with the resources we have set aside here. And where we don't, we'll need to have those resources returned. So the intent here and some next steps that we're actively working to take is to check back in with all of those projects that are not meeting their readiness standards now, reach out, give an opportunity to cure, and if they can't cure and identify the path forward with resources that they need to do so, then we need to move on to the next project. And again, those projects can come back in a future iteration to be able to create their full successful financing package that will be able to be feasible through the duration. So those are active efforts that the team is driving forward. In the meantime, we're continuing to work to close projects. As projects are stepping out of place, we are going to be filling those in, again, with the idea of delivering as much of that private activity bond to these projects that are ready now. I think as we will see, some of that don't feel like we had it fully in place to be able to know with certainty that we have projects that need the additional private activity bonds that remain with committee, but anticipate that that might be the case next quarter. Most certainly would be coming back with that update either way, but would think that that is when we'll have recast what we have currently on and addressed any of those projects that are not meeting their readiness standards. As we are launching the ORCA, within the next month or so, I am expecting that we are both pursuing this last gap offering. We are not right now planning to add more projects into our private activity bond queue. I think the projects that you see represented on this slide here of ready waiting, there are others that also want to be queued up and they're looking for 2025. So after we launch our the ORCA process, we are pivoting also to do engagement around our qualified allocation plan, which is the policy document that drives private activity bond or 4% to 9% low income housing tax credits and therefore has connections to private activity bonds to solidify and determine the way to implement those resources also into this future ORCA process. Which again is trying to drive it with much more of a standards-based evaluation instead of a competitive evaluation for prioritizing resources. I think we're looking forward to the next discussion around rulemaking, as we will need to make sure that we have rules in place to allow sub-allocation, which was a statutory change, and we do have projects in our pipeline that are intended to have issuance from the housing authority, and we want to make sure that we have that in place in alignment and with deference to Treasury policies and practices as we do so. And I know Matthew from our debt management is actively engaged in both talking with you, but also tracking the conversation so that we are coordinated in that front. And so I think with that, maybe I'll just see if either Ty or Matthew have any other insight to add, and then certainly any discussion or questions are welcome.
Yeah, just Ty Dunson, Strain AD, Oregon House, just for visibility standpoint, we are we are going to be moving forward with temp rules in regards to a project that's being sponsored by Clackamas Housing Authority. Just in the interest of time, we felt it was just prudent to initiate temp rules for the sub-allocation process, because we have a closing. It's scheduled to be closing this June, but we will be working with the committee to make sure that our rules are lockstep in conjunction for the finalized rulemaking process. So everybody's on we're committed to doing that, and we'll be talking again to you soon about that process.
Great. Any open for any discussion or questions that you might have for us.
Any questions from the committee members?
None from me. Thanks.
No, thank you.
Natasha, I did have one. You talked about failing when projects are failing readiness and they're given some time to. Or can you talk a little bit more about how much time they're given to or allotted to cure that their process, their progress?
Ty, if you want to back me up here as well. But so I think our intent is to give a short window of time to be able to remedy with a plan. And so the plan doesn't need to be fully implemented and executed at that point in time, but that it would be, within the next 30 days, let us know, what is your funding gap? When can you close? If you have a funding gap, we would have that 10% rule of thumb to know if that is something that we'll be able to actively consider or if it will be outside of the bounds, and then asking them to recast. So again, with this idea of wanting to make sure that we can deploy the resources that we have available to us, we're wanting to make that a relatively quick window for criticality of the plan, and then translate that into, okay, now these are your new agreed upon metrics for evaluating, wanting to focus those on projects that can continue to close in 2024, as that's what they were funded to do. And if they can't do that, that it would need to come back. So really trying to do this as a lever to make sure that we are focusing our priorities on projects that are moving and not stalled out for a longer amount of time. I think back in prior days where there was not a constrained resource and there was ability to shift timelines and not feel like there was resources that could be doing something if they were freed up, that's the place where we are now. So we know that where we are holding resources, we are actively not giving them to another project, and if that other project was more viable in the near term, that should be the priority.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I think that's good to hear, especially because of the large pipeline that y'all have, and with the limited resources to kind of keep that, engine moving.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think I also, the work of putting projects together is significant, and it is habitually really difficult to have those challenging conversations and hold accountability. And so this is a learning process across both sides, and these are challenging conversations. And I think they're really important that we have ways to really hold accountability and not just to the quality and caliber of the housing that it exists after it is built, but to this upfront financing process and this idea that we need to make sure that we are best deploying resources and not best holding resources.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for your presentation, and we look forward to supporting housing and its efforts. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much for the time.
So next we'll go to next agenda item. So the next agenda item is proposed rule amendment. So really quick, I wanted to kind of talk about, you know, during the 23 regular session of the legislature, Senate Bill 225 was passed that allows for the sub-allocation of legislatively allocated PAB authority from a state agency to another issuer. So included in the materials are proposed amendments to the PABC governing rules. That, by the way, already established reporting requirements back to the committee for any allocations that are made. The proposed amendments would bring in line and create administrative rules to govern the sub-allocations allowed under Senate Bill 225. So I understand you may not have had too much time to review, but it is important that we begin the rulemaking process to make any needed revisions in the rules to make sure we account for those sub-allocations. That will require creating a separate rulemaking calendar, public input, and lastly, a future approval vote of the final rule changes by this committee. What I'm looking for, we're asking for today, what I'm asking for today is a vote to put forth these draft amendments and begin that process. So again, like I said, there will be an opportunity for us to have public input, make modifications to this draft amendment. But to be able to begin that process, we need the committee to kind of at least approve this draft in draft form and then start that calendar creation. Let me stop there, see if there's any questions from the committee members, Teresa or Rhonda.
Where does the draft language come from here?
It's taken partially from the Senate bill and then partially just from another place within the rules.
We tried to mimic the reporting that was already established by the existing rules and just apply it to the sub-allocations the same way it was applied to regular committee allocations. To try and not make it any different than rules that were already established for the committee. We're just trying to account now for the sub-allocation. So that's why we're referencing other areas of the same type of reporting standards that we've already been working under.
Okay, thank you.
Rhonda, any questions?
I don't have any questions, I don't believe.
Okay. I can open this, I can entertain any questions from the public on this. But like I said, there will be an opportunity separate from this committee where we will have a separate public meeting to talk about the rules. Matthew?
Hi, thank you. Matthew Harris, Capital Markets Assistant Director at Oregon Housing. I just wanted to say, you know, that we're going to be the first agency that's going to be impacted by these rules, as Natasha kind of already alluded to, and we've been thinking about implementing our own temporary rules for our sub-allocant recipients, potential sub-allocation recipients this year, and trying to make sure that those are in line with what the committee likely has expectations around, given the current rules that are already in place. And so I just wanted to comment, you know, we're very supportive of the amendments to this. You know, just taking my OHCS hat off and putting on my state debt manager cap, You know, I think the state has, and the Private Activity Bond Committee in particular, has a vested interest in making sure that all of these allocations are tracked and reported appropriately. And so the one thing I would just add, seeing the draft out here, and I know we'll have time to make comments later when you guys go through the actual rulemaking process, but you know, we have no objections to the reporting requirements. I would just suggest you think about the timing of these allocations and when they get returned, because the language to me wasn't entirely clear. If you're, you know, currently going to ask for a report back to you within 150 days or December 15th of making that allocation, to it being, you know, do you want to put restrictions on us for how long we can make sub-allocations? Do you want the timing to be tighter related to other reporting that we might be doing? Because I think we submit quarterly updates. Those were the two main things I would just throw out there for committee consideration as you go forward in the process. And, you know, like I said, we're supportive, and we just want to make sure we get this right so that you have everything you need and so that we're reporting everything correctly ultimately to the IRS each year, so we can continue to get our allocations. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Any other questions from anybody? Hearing none. Is there a motion to move forward with the proposed administrative rule amendments?
So I move that we move forward with the draft PAB Treasury administrative rules process related to the sub-allocating of the PAB bonding.
Thank you.
I second the motion.
Thank you. Thank you. The motion has been moved and seconded. Committee members, how do you vote? Rhonda?
Aye.
Teresa?
Aye.
Myself, aye. Thank you. The motion passes, and we'll make sure and keep you all informed on the next steps as we go through the process. I think that concludes our agenda. Before we adjourn, are there any additional comments from any PAB committee members?
None from me.
Okay. Thank you. It is now 10:43, and I will entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting.
I move that we adjourn the April 17th, 2024 Private Activity Bond Committee meeting.
Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Are there any objections to adjourning the meeting? Hearing none. The April 17th Private Activity Bond Committee meeting is now adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.